Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in, and a very happy Thursday to you. We are on hour two with our time with Dr. Troy. Every single month, he comes in studio. For each month, we have an edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy, where we take your health questions. And I love the way Dr. Troy always integrates faith, scripture, and practical ways that we can improve our health so we can last long and finish strong. And Dr. Troy, we talked a little bit first hour about a new report that was out that says just for the first time in 40 years, life expectancy for Americans has gone down. And you said that there's multiple factors in that report. So say a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, and this is just my opinion thinking about it based on some of the stuff I've seen. And what I would say is one of the reasons why life expectancy improved so much prior to this was that we did so much better with infant mortality. And so when we had less babies dying at birth during childbirth and less challenges with the babies early on, that increased quite a bit. We also developed medications that helped keep people alive. We could argue quality of life was not as good, but they still were basically surviving things they weren't surviving before. But now what we're seeing is, especially when it comes to things like cancer, the adult cancers have plateaued, and we seem to be managing that quite well. But children's cancer seems to be growing at a faster rate, and there's much more challenges with that. And so that's part of it. But also our lifestyle is a very, very big part of that, where we're seeing people dying longer and living shorter.
Wow.
So their quality of life is not quite there. And so our lifestyle has caught up, where we're not getting the benefit as much. So we are seeing more challenges with that. And I think we've lost the edge we had with the infant mortality scenario.
So what about the childhood cancer? You say those numbers are going up. What do you attribute that to?
Well, our cancers occur because our immune system is unable to protect against invading whatever, whether it's a chemical that's new to our environment. We're just exposed to so many more things than we ever used to be. And in fact, we're exposed to 1,100 chemicals, new chemicals, every year that the FDA cannot assess. They can't tell us if it is going to be problematic until it gets out into the world. And it's just a lot. And we're doing things to make our immune system less healthy. And I'm going to say something. I want you to hear the full aspect of this, because I don't want you to think you've just induced cancer in your child if you've done this. But I think there's a big problem with how we're managing the sun and sunscreen. And sunscreen itself, slapped all over children, blocks out the majority of the sun, which is good for sunburn. But that means it's also blocking out vitamin D, the main hormone associated with managing our immune system. So at the same time, all these kids are born into our world, and we now know that they're actually born into a toxic world, because there was a study of babies' umbilical cord blood. And in that blood, there was an average of 10 known carcinogens in the umbilical cord blood of those newborn babies. So their immune system is already fighting stuff, and it has to learn. And then if we continue to do things that don't help the immune system, so lifestyle stress, poor sleep habits, blocking
fight
the
flight
sun.
Meals.
Fight flight meals. Yeah, like on the fly, no nutrients. My child only eats chicken McNuggets from McDonald's. I can't tell you how many patients tell me that, where their children will only eat these certain foods, and it's because there's chemicals in them that not talking about McDonald's here now, but a lot of these foods have chemicals that increase our addictive tendencies towards them, and kids aren't eating the vegetables like they used to and they should be. And the vegetables aren't necessarily as clean as they used to be. So we're just exposed to a lot more chemicals in the environment, and we're doing things that aren't nurturing our immune system. Kids are growing up much, much faster emotionally. They're having to with technology, internet. They're exposed to so much more. And not to go into a complete different realm, but there was a time when we had parents at home a lot more with their kids. And now, just to survive, many parents are working day and night trying to provide for their family. And so I think that that's a big part of it as well, is that kids are being raised by our teachers, our technology, television, whatever you want to call it. And that plays into it as well, as far as the immune system development and how they eat. It's a big, big topic, obviously.
Boy, and I'm really glad you're addressing it. And again, we want to say we can so appreciate, as parents, all that you are managing. It seems impossible at times, but I don't know why I got thinking about this, but I was listening to our noon show recently with Neil Stabum, and he was interviewing a military man who was 103 years old. And the clarity of this man at 103 years old was amazing. And one of the things he said was kind of saying, like what President Reagan once said, peace through strength, that really wickedness preys on the most vulnerable, on the weakest. And our friends at IJM would say the same thing, that even if you have laws in place, the weakest and most vulnerable are the ones always subject to the wickedness of man. But I think it's the same in health, in that if we're not building strength into our health, building strength into our family, there is a vacuum there that the enemy will find somehow, some way. Disease will find somehow, some way. So let's just talk for just a moment about, not, this isn't guilt, this isn't obligation, but maybe let's just have a conversation about what can we adjust to create an atmosphere of health for us physically, but even relationally as a family. I remember reading a report a year or two ago that childhood ulcers are on the rise. And isn't that directly connected to the stress most often that they're dealing with?
Yeah, most often the stress and the diet. And sometimes antibiotic use where there's a little infection, but most commonly the stress. And that's exactly what we're talking about. And again, this is something that it's a big topic, and I think it's it tugs at all of our hearts, because I can guarantee, I know as a parent, that as a owner of a business in the healthcare field, I have a heart to help people, and when I'm with those people, I just want to do more of it. And then I go home and I'm with my kids and I'm like, oh, I want to be at home with my kids, and I just want to do more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Many times in my personal life, I've felt like I'm letting them down or letting them down, and you can only do the best that you can do. So it boils down to being consciously working with intention for your family and your kids' health. And what I mean by that is consciously decide to go celebrate after a sports event and get some healthier choices instead of going to a restaurant that doesn't offer the healthy choices. Talking to your kids ahead of time with that. And then being with them, talking with them when you can. I will tell you right now, it's not the time. It's not the amount of time. It's the quality of that time that you spend with them. And the same is true with the food, the quality of the food, and just paying attention to the little things that they need. And I'm going to say this in a different way too. On the personal responsibility front, my mindset has always been that love looks very different. Our kids, from a health perspective, need two things. They need love and they need structure. If they don't have that structure, that's what freaks them out more than anything. And as parents, we should teach them there are consequences to bad choices in a healthy, loving way. And when you do that and actually hold them accountable for the little things that you are doing for them, that's serving them from a health perspective, because that gives them an idea of what the boundaries are, And when kids don't have boundaries, think about as an adult when you don't have boundaries, it's a scary world. When you're a kid without boundaries, that's even scarier. They have no tools to deal with that yet. They're just developing. Their immune system is developing. Their faith is developing. Their digestive system is developing. So for us, it's the little things that we do for our child. And sometimes it looks like discipline. Sometimes it looks like a hug. Sometimes it looks like a conversation. And sometimes it looks like just getting that a fresh meal on the table that was hard for you to do, but you managed to do it. Or I've had patients who don't have time to do it, so they barter with their neighbors to cook meals, and the neighbors just make a couple extra helpings, and they barter for when their schedules work. And so little things like that can make a world of difference. And as someone who likes to cook but really does, because my wife is amazing at it and she loves to cook as well, I'm like a crock pot king. So learning how to cook with the crock pot, healthy foods, it can be done. Let's just put it that way. Spending a little time looking into answers for those problems is very, very important for
our
kids.
You know, maybe even think about one diet element, one lifestyle element. Just start there that you could change. You know, Pastor Craig Groeschel, he's a best-selling author. He's been on the show a handful of times. 6 kids. He's the pastor of one of the largest churches in the nation. And one night a week, they all put all of their electronic stuff in a drawer in a box, and they have family night. And he said when it first started, they're all like, "Dad, are you kidding me?" Because he had some teenagers there. Now they just willingly, because it's become such a bonding time. We're so attached to our smartphones and those things. And, but to just take some kind of intention where I'm going to make a lifestyle choice and a dietary choice, those reap consequences as well, right? That they reap fruit in your life.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, we'll pause here. We'll continue to take your questions. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Andrew wrote in about back problems. We'll read his email too when we come back. Don't go away. More with Dr. Troy when we return. Hope you're having a good day. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, having a really great conversation with our friend, Dr. Troy Spurl. We'll have the link to his practice up on our show page today. Every month we have him on for Health and Healing with Dr. Troy, taking your questions, and keep those emails coming, the calls coming as well. If you're too nervous about getting on the air, you can either call in anonymously or stay anonymous and just tell your question to Aaron, and he'll translate it to me. 877-933-2484 or email Susie at myfaithradio.com. So Andrew writes in and says, "Hey, Susie, Dr. Troy, I can't lie on my back to sleep for pain in my lower back. I can't stand in one place without moving, or I get pain in the same spot. It can last for days. I've been told I have scoliosis, but I didn't have time for the treatments or for the $2,000 a chiropractor said it would cost. What do you say?"
Well, that's a tough one, because if it truly is from scoliosis, then that there has to be some level of treatment there to help offset it. Core exercises will help a lot, but generally speaking, we have to discern, is it coming from the scoliosis or not? But it definitely sounds like there's a muscle called the psoas muscle that can pull one way or the other. And so making sure those muscles and the bones themselves are balanced is pretty key for that. If you're having that challenge standing, it means there's imbalance there. So at that point, either a chiropractic or orthopedic consult is pretty much needed. You can do a lot to help correct it, especially get out of pain. And as far as the price tag with that, that's pretty standard, actually. So no ways around that part of it as far as that amount. If it truly is a scoliosis, that's about accurate for what we'd expect to look at. And so it's a tough thing. You can try to work on the muscles of your core and pelvis and hip flexors yourself if money's really tight. But if not, try and problem solve that And if you trust the person making those recommendations, and they've got some good results with it, it's a pretty standard process. And they don't do a lot of, depending on the scoliosis, the orthopedic surgeons don't do a lot of the bracing and stuff, but they will do a lot of physical therapy and other things, which has been also shown to be highly, highly effective. So,
wow, very good. This anonymous caller said, concerned about my grandkids' lack of sleep. Excuse me. They get up at 6 a.m., go to school, and have soccer practice and other things, and their practice will start sometimes as late as 8 p.m.
Oh,
and
gosh.
As a grandma, should I say something?
Ooh,
that would be tough as a grandma.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, wow. Yeah, that's a great question, because I don't know. This is not necessarily in the health realm, but I have kids. I've got grandkids myself right now, and for me, my decision was to leave the parenting up to the parents as much as possible, but be there as a support. Having said that, the years of wisdom that us older folk have does mean something. So if there's an observation, so if they're living on sugar, or you're seeing a consequence to that lifestyle, then it can be brought up in a very tactful way. And one of the things I would just say, it depends on the relationships involved here, but if it's your son or daughter, and I always like to ask permission to have conversations like that, actually, who am I kidding? I actually give my opinion, but I counsel people to ask permission I've observed something. I have concerns. Are you open to having a conversation about what I'm seeing? And if they say yes, then that gives you permission to have an open conversation. I will say, generally speaking, when we slow down as grandparents, we see things we missed as parents.
Good point.
And so we're much more sensitive to that. We also have the tendency to worry more about our grandkids than we probably should. But at the same time, I would use careful observation, ask the question, or just give your opinion.
Blurt it out.
Blurt it out.
Let the chips fall.
Yep.
You know, and prayer. Prayer is a good thing,
yes,
to, you know, ask God for an opportunity.
Yeah.
This is from Ginger. What does Dr. Troy think about low-carb, high-protein, high-fat diet for weight loss, ketogenic, she says?
Yeah, it works. So the Atkins was the medical doctor who started that process, and it does work. And the one thing is, you have to be very, very careful, because you don't get a lot of the antioxidants, and so you do have to supplement with it. Know your body. It tends not to be the lifestyle I like to choose. Will work for weight loss, but then afterwards, you still, if you don't want to eat that way forever, which almost, it's rare for people to decide to eat like that forever. So if you do go down that road, you still have to get to a point that when you start to eat more of a balanced diet, the carbs are going to come back in there, and you may gain the weight back again. So you still have to manage that.
You're burning fat for energy, but what happens when you lose the fat? I mean, is it even possible to burn protein for energy? And wouldn't that be so hard on the kidneys to do that? I mean, that's not a sustainable way to live, right?
Yeah. If you look at, like, there's a show called Survivor, and anytime we don't get enough calories, you can start to lose muscle mass. So, you'll get to a certain weight, and then you have to either eat a certain amount of fat for your energy, or just add the actual carbs in there a little bit. And that, they can increase once you get to a point of, I believe it's 20 grams is what they limit you to in the beginning, and then you can go up to. And if you can minimize your carbs to 100 grams a day, then you're doing quite well.
Hmm. So that is a suitable way to lose weight if you have
works.
A lot of weight to lose,
yep.
Just not a way to live.
I wrote a paper on it back in the mid-90s, and it's quite brilliant how he came up with it. I mean, it really is, from a biochemical perspective of how we get into ketosis, and actually starts to pull fat. So it can actually pull fat from hard to break down locations. And so it does work, but you have to also really keep an eye on your antioxidants and your minerals.
Okay. Jennifer says, I like to do a 21-day juicing regimen similar to what Joe Cross did in his documentary Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. I'm not familiar with that one. But does anything adverse happen from not eating solids?
Potentially, yes. Mm-hmm. So juice fasting is something that I personally think you just have to be very careful with it. It does work, yes. It can also, for the wrong people, not be the right thing to do. So just like the previous question with the high protein ketogenic diet, you have to know yourself how you respond. And with the juice fasting, you just have to be careful. People who have candida, yeast, or other infections that feed off of sugar are still going to be feeding that. So there can be scenarios there. But if the calorie intake is so low, it can cause some challenges. And there's something about eating whole foods that's good for our brain, the satiation part of it. And so you start to lose that. So my concerns do go into the bacteria and the digestive system, the serotonin and dopamine components that help us feel good in the brain. So a lot of times you don't know how you're going to respond until you do it. They do have places that will actually board you for the more extreme ones, and you stay there and sleep there, and fasting centers. And so they're the more extreme ones. But you can do the ones they have, other ones you do at home, and you just have to observe and make sure. I always tell people, make sure you tell your family and friends you're doing
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If I start to grow hair off the side of my face.
Yes.
But, I mean, there are symptoms that come up when you're fasting, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I've also heard people say that not only does it, you know, because things are coming to the surface, but that it makes it harder for them to start eating normal food again for a while. And so some have said, I've tried it. It creates more problems than it solves. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it has that potential, because as we clean things up, there are consequences to that. So if you stop eating a lot of calories in your food, and let's say you have some food sensitivities, many people, when they eat something they're mildly reacting to, will produce mucus. And then that mucus kind of makes everything work better in your digestive system as far as being regular. And when you stop that, things will actually dry up for a little bit. And there's almost a reorganizing of how things work. And you have to know how to manage that and get through that. So there can be a lot of different metabolic processes that occur. And you have to know how to manage them as they come up.
And so you don't want to wing this sort of thing.
No.
Right?
You've got to be prepared. You've got to have resources that you can go to answer the questions of, this is happening, is it normal? That type of scenario. And when you do have that, it makes it puts your mind at ease. And sometimes there's things you have to do, like to get the bowels moving again with that type of diet. You may have to add some magnesium at nighttime, drink more water, or add fiber from a different source in there just to get things moving again. So you never know what has to be managed.
When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit more about managing stress. I'd love to ask you about, just to get you ready here, about the story we tell ourselves. The story we tell ourselves about our health, about how we respond emotionally, mentally to our physical ailments. Because you talk often about the importance of where we put our thoughts. Got a few more questions we can chime in, and love to hear from you as well. 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. And we will be back in a moment. Hope you're having a great day today. Really glad you tuned in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Loving this time, this conversation with our good buddy, Dr. Troy. Every month we have him on for an edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. And I love the plethora of questions that come in. Oh, so many topics. And we've got a few more to tackle here, Dr. Troy, but I teed up before the break a couple of things. One, managing stress. I mean, there are times when it's just the perfect storm where you have deadlines or projects at work, and then loved one and somebody in your family has got a bad diagnosis and your kid goes off the rails and suddenly you're in it. I don't know, you know, what can you do? What are some tips for that person who feels like even right now they're in the perfect storm, how to manage stress and why that matters?
Well, number one, it matters because when we don't manage stress, there's a consequence to that. Mm. And that will lead to dysfunction, and then dysfunction eventually leads to disease. So long term, not managing of stress will lead to a disease of some sort. So very, very important. And generally speaking, it happens whenever there's a breakdown in communication, whether it be from brain to body, cell to cell, or person to person, or individual to God. And so what I would say is, when you have stress, do your best to maximize communication. So sometimes what that looks like is saying no to someone, but explaining why. Saying, no, you know what, I'm at my ceiling right now. I actually would love to do that, but right now is a bad time. Get back to me later or what have you.
And most people would understand
they
that.
They do. Yeah. Most do.
Yeah. And that's for another show.
That's that another show, yeah, yes. Yeah. The ones that don't. But also sitting down, too, even afterwards and having conversations with people just to let them know. People just want to be in the why, in the know. They if you keep them in the loop, then you get grace from them because they stop making stuff up in their own head.
Good point.
So we are human, and one of the things that causes stress for us is the thinking we know what other people are thinking about us, when the reality is they're really not thinking about us. They're overwhelmed with their own things.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so just keeping them in the know, and it literally only takes seconds of communication, and good communicators can do that even in times when they're overwhelmed, and they become comfortable with the uncomfortableness of life, and they're able to accomplish more because of that. They delegate certain things, and people they become accustomed to that. They know that you care. But they also know that you are really busy or wrapped up or just overloaded here. And then all of a sudden, it just changes the whole demeanor. You feel better because you have addressed it in some way. It's not the end result you're both looking for right now, but you actually are okay with it because it's been addressed for now. And it gives you time to reorganize, reprioritize, and get back on top of things.
And we got to add the faith element to that because he, you know, Romans 8:28, he causes all things to work together for the good. Remember a year and a half ago when a lot of the family stuff of our family, cancer and different things going on, and I had a deadline and it was physically impossible to be at the hospital for multiple family members and finish this book on time. And I was stressed about it because I'm hyper responsible. But I called Andy, my senior acquisitions editor, and I'm like, and he's like, you can take a deep breath here. And I started to back up and explain. He said, okay, no problem. He said, 6 months. Does that work for you? And I felt my whole body just relax. I'm like, I can do that, and I can do it well. But I feel like when you're a kingdom person, you know, Jesus wants you in a place of health and rhythm and kind of harmony. And most times you're going to find a supernatural intervention that he works it out for you because he's for you, right?
Yes. Yes. Always. And it's funny because stress really, for the most part, is when we look at it in hindsight, it's stuff that we created that for me personally, I picture God just sitting back there having a little chuckle and smile at how creative we get at causing our own stress in our life because he's already got it worked out.
Exactly. They'll come back around.
Yep. This is going to be good.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about just the story we tell ourselves. One thing I've learned in this past year, just dealing with this new, you know, stuff I've been dealing with, is to celebrate the small victories and just count my blessings constantly. It has done so much. I mean, I really, even though physically I don't have the energy still that I once had, that I'm getting it back, my spirit is thriving and I feel joyful and blessed and grateful because I'm just constantly counting my blessings and going, well, I don't have that thing anymore. I have this. And you know what I mean? And I just, that's biblical. But I think it's physically healthy too. Talk a bit about just the importance of the story we tell ourselves.
Yeah, our story is very, very crucial, and it influences our overall health and who we are. And the reality is we're all imperfect beings living together. And then truly, for me, that's the miracle in itself, is that think about all of the imperfections surrounding each other, and yet we're able to create what we've created, even the city of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and all the good that's done. And we can sit here and focus on all the negativity, or we can also look at what's been accomplished. Because the reality is there will always be something that you fall short of because we're human. Mm-hmm. And so we can focus on what we've fallen short of, or we can acknowledge it like the rearview mirror that it did happen, but I know where I'm going. And then you reflect on all of the good things that are happening. And in the healthcare field, we have to have this conversation so much, because as people improve through the process, they forget what was concerning to them. And one of the benefits of being able to take notes is you can go back to those notes and exams and say, this is what wasn't working before. And I can't tell you how many times people say, I forgot about that.
Wow.
Because as those things start to improve, then we start working on what's next and what's next. And it's a process and a journey. And it's very important not necessarily to ignore the stuff that's still not right, but at the same time, have gratitude for what is working. And look at, if we start to get into the habit of stopping, taking a look at what's around us and the beauty that we see and all of what God is doing for us and other people in our lives, that's life-giving, and that's healing.
Yeah, wow. And somebody once said, what if you woke up tomorrow with only the things you thanked God for today?
I love that.
I love that too, because there is so many things. We have this insatiable appetite to want what we want, but there's so many things that we're walking in answers to prayers that we prayed yesterday. Yeah. And it's good for the soul to go, okay, I'm not 100% where I want to be, but I don't feel like someone's choking me anymore.
That's right.
That's a positive thing. You know, I mean, there is lots to be thankful for, and the story we tell ourselves matters. And I think going into the holidays, it's especially important, because there are going to be stresses and family stresses and health stresses. You're going to wake up and feel toxic because you ate 17 cookies, you know, and there's mercy for that. But I think how you speak to yourself and how you treat your soul will really determine how you fare through this season.
Yeah, 100%. And during this time too, when I think of Jesus, I think of just the gift, a gift. And this is a season of giving. So I want to encourage people to know that everyone has a story. And during this time of year, I want you to just try something. I want you to take a step out of yourself and observe other people, because I will tell you right now, there are women who are going through their first Christmas without their spouse passed away. This is the first time. And when you go through those firsts without the person you've loved for years, that's not an easy thing. And there are people that you don't know that are suffering because of the time of the year. They feel lonely or alone, or something's happened, or like I said, it's a first for them. Everyone's got a story, and I feel privileged that I get to listen to people's challenges in their life, because they walk in and they look like they've got it all together, and then they start sharing what's going on in their life, and your heart breaks for them.
Yeah.
And these people are all around us, and really, depending on the season we're in, many of us have been through that. So take time and reflect on when you're in that season, and look for the people around you. It actually goes with what you were talking about earlier about random acts of kindness.
Yeah.
When you take yourself out of it, you start to see, and God will make it very much available to you when people need help. It'll be as simple as that person when you catch them just with that pure look of sadness on their face. Maybe just going up to them and starting a conversation. And people will share their story, and they all have one. And sometimes just being a gift for that person is an answer to your prayer.
Boy, that's so good. Let's take an early break here, because when we come back, I'd love to just talk about the post-traumatic stress, the muscle memory, the relational memory, the emotional memory, because we have a question around that. But Dr. Troy, if you don't mind, when we come back, I'd love for you to tell that story of that military man who was all locked up and frozen up, and they did not know what to do with him. And they sent him to you, and really a miraculous recovery, but there was some PTSD there too.
Yeah.
But just the whole idea that God wants to redeem our story, and there are times that we have to revisit old pains so that we can see them redeemed. So that's what we'll talk about next. If you want to interject a question, one more segment here with Dr. Troy, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a moment.
Christmas is almost here.
Ah, love that. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Hope you're having a great day. We sure are. If you just tuned in, you're going to have to go back and catch the whole podcast because every month we're blessed to have Dr. Troy Spurl in studio with us to answer your health questions. The reason we do this, Live the Promise is a deeper life show. Well, your health has very much to do with your faith life. And you know how it is when your health goes awry, it impacts everything. And God does want us healthy. And there are choices we can make. And there's help for us when we struggle. And sometimes you're so surprised to find out, I am, that there are just tangible tweaks that you think you're doing the right thing. And if you can just tweak it, it actually is the right thing for your particular situation. So we're going to talk about post-traumatic stress here in just a moment and just the whole idea of muscle memory, emotional memory, when we get sort of stuck in a cycle because of past trauma that God can and does reset. But first, this caller said, is an addiction a disease like alcoholism? Is it a disease or is it an addiction by choice?
It's a good question and a large topic, and this is my opinion on based on what I've seen, and I'm going to say it's both, meaning that you do see some genetic similarities, but I always lean towards taking responsibility for our health, and so I'll set up the scenario of how that looks. Many people, if you have a wheat sensitivity and allergy, sometimes that can set up cravings, and the majority of alcohol is wheat-based. And so we see sometimes it's nothing more than a craving, and there's some genetic components to that for people that are sensitive. So there are some probabilities and some genetic scenarios, but also our life choices directly influence it. And so people can cause stress, create stress, not deal with stress. And when we have stress, we crave one of two things, sugar and salt. And wow. So sometimes it is choice because we're choosing to not manage the stress in our life. And generally speaking, when we crave sugar, women crave, you want to guess what they crave first as far as their sugar of choice?
Chocolate.
Yes, you nailed it. Mm-hmm. Women crave chocolate first. Guys crave alcohol. So guys do not crave chocolate. It's not even their top three. So when it comes to that scenario, many times it's our choices that help create the stress. And then when you realize you manage the stress, the cravings go away. So then we know that was more choice, right, versus the genetic component to it. So I really do think it's both.
And once you get into the addiction and it's full blown, you can't really – most times can't recover from that by yourself, then you need outside help,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it's all about taking responsibility, yeah, which includes seeking help.
Yeah. And we opened the show with a passage from Romans 8 about life gives birth to life, and you know, life gives birth to more life, which is life and peace, and flesh gives birth to death. And here again, because we've got to look at this. If we have stress and we're just wanting to get through the moment or numb the pain, that's not giving us life and peace. It's putting us in more captivity. And that's what the enemy wants for our lives.
Yes, and it's delaying the inevitable anyway.
So we're stepping on toes, but maybe our toes need to be stepped on because yes. God wants, it's for freedom that Christ has set us free.
Yes.
So we've got about, let's see, about 6-7 minutes. Talk about not just the kind of PTSD that we think about, like maybe from a war vet, which is huge and significant, but there are maybe a smaller version, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but ways that our bodies will get stuck in a cycle from past injuries or past emotional traumas.
Yeah, to reiterate the story I shared many years ago with a technique I didn't share the story many years ago, but this occurred many years ago with a war vet, and he had locked-in syndrome, which means he essentially had hit his head, caused a concussion, was healing in the sick bay area, and then found out his newborn baby son may not make it through the night. That physical and emotional trauma basically affect an area of the brain called the basal ganglia, which sets the tone for muscles and emotions. And he woke up frozen stiff. And so it's an extreme example of how stress can affect us physically. Mm. And he was referred, he'd been like in that state for a year when they first called me.
So frozen for a year, like his limbs were
He could move, but it was like very, very stiff.
Wow.
So it was like a shuffle and a mumble.
Wow.
And just contracted.
Man.
And so they thought it was a virus or something, and I asked him to run a PET scan, and I thought it was an area of the brain called the basal ganglia. And it took another year and before they did it, and it showed basal ganglia dysfunction, hyper blood flow to that area. And so they said, the Army's sending him to your clinic. And I said I knew what area of the brain it sounded like. I didn't say I knew how to fix it. So I did what I always do when I don't know an answer or I'm concerned about what's coming in is I pray. And so my prayer was answered instantaneously with this particular scenario where God just showed me to look at this area of the brain and keep going. Just keep working with it. So I started looking at a different area of the brain, not the basal ganglia, but the cerebellum, where our muscle memory goes through. And he started being able to move a little bit. And then after a couple of hours of working and stimulating multiple different areas at the same time, he literally jumped up off the table, clapped his hands, and said, "What's next?"
Wow.
And he was good. He walked out of the room and got on an airplane to fly back to his home state. And something he said kind of triggered everything for me. He said, the second the airplane started, it's as if my body remembered the vibration of the airplane and his hand started to tremor and he went right back into that frozen state. And so he came back and we started looking at it. And what we had to do is mimic many of the sensory signals he had gotten over the year, the visual stuff. We'd literally show him a picture of his son after he'd been good for a little bit and he'd go into that frozen state. And then we would work that with that area of the brain and then he'd be fine for a little while. It took a couple months to reset the majority of his triggers. But what that led to was I started wondering, I wonder how many of my healthy patient population have this. And it turns out we all do, just to a lesser degree. When we have stress, we feel the muscle tension, but what we don't see is how our brain is constantly shutting down muscles as well, that it's weakening muscles. It's the equivalent of driving your car with one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake.
Whoa.
It's very hard on our bodies. And so this was happening with the majority of people. And when we did a clinical study around it, we found that the number one word that triggered people was money or finances. And then other things would creep up in there. Mom, dad were in the top five. The word no is one of the top ones. And then fear. And they're all there. Not everyone has every single one, but people would have different ones. And what that means is we're walking around with mild forms of post-traumatic stress disorder. And with each one, there is what I can say after working with this for 10 years, with each one, you can reset the physical component to this. And then apply biblical knowledge. For example, when resentment is there, forgiveness is needed. And so when we identify that resentment is one of the causes or one of the triggers, then it's easy to identify forgiveness is very much needed. And same thing with surrender and other biblical gratitude, other biblical principles.
So let's say the person has some PTSD around finances. They've had in their marriage context constant struggle with finance. It's been a fight, flight, frustration, stress. How does that play out in their health? Does that make their cells less effective in receiving nutrients? Could it affect weight gain, weight loss, those kinds of things?
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh,
so
I'm amazing.
Yes, you
just
are.
Kidding.
When we're in that fight or flight, literally the cells will close off. They'll start to fold over on each other. Think of it this way. If you're in fight or flight, it's like being chased by a tiger, and it's a survival mechanism. So we're beautifully designed, and when we're in fight or flight, the brain will send all the blood and oxygen and nerve energy to our arms and legs so we can get out of there. When you're being chased by a tiger, really bad time to take a nap, sit down and eat lunch. And so your brain is not supplying those areas with oxygen or fuel or nerve stimulus. So there's almost a shutdown there. And so the fight or flight also, after extended period of time, the cells will start to fold over on each other. And it's like if we're being attacked, it's a survival mechanism. The cells are probably going to survive an attack more if they kind of fold over on each other and protect ourselves. But that blocks a lot of our receptors. So the minerals don't go into the cells. The water doesn't follow, and so we start to see a speeding up of the aging process, a degenerative change, because one of the ways you can tell if you're aging is if you start to wrinkle, right, which is basically an inability to retain the water that you have. So getting the water inside the cells is a direct reflection of the health and potential age of that cell.
And here, you know, I'm just super open about my process here, but I think I mentioned this a few months ago. I drink 70 ounces of water a day. I'm a pretty disciplined person. But when I first saw you a year ago and you did the whole, I don't know, intake test where it tests muscle mass and all these things, I'm 5'2 and a half, and I was showing to be 3 liters short of water for my small frame, even though I'm drinking 70 ounces a day, which goes to show you, you can have the best disciplines in the world, but if you're not managing your stress, a lot of those things are going to waste.
Yeah, it's not how much you drink, it's how much you retain.
Wow. Wow, absolutely amazing. Got just a few minutes left here. But this whole idea then, so the person who has some PTSD, what are some things that they need to do to see a reset, even in just because their physiological makeup is responding to an old trauma that's affecting their present? I mean, what are some first things they can do?
Well, awareness is the first step. So if you have an ability or can identify what is triggering you, That's a first step. Unfortunately, many people don't even know what's triggering them. So doing some investigation around that is helpful. But when it comes to these old patterns and programs, you get to reprogram, if you will. So what you can do is find a release. So sometimes through prayer, that's all we need to do when you've identified specifically what you're praying about, and not just from a head level, but from a heart level. There's a difference when you actually feel the emotion behind what you're saying and thinking. And physical activity, this area of the brain sets a tone for muscles and emotions. So physical activity is very important. And biblical principles like forgiveness and gratitude and surrender are almost always part of the equation. But sometimes you don't know who you're supposed to forgive, or many times I find that people will ask for forgiveness, but they themselves don't forgive themselves. And so you have to remember, almost step away from yourself again and start treating you like your best friend.
Wow.
And then you'd start to treat yourself differently.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start doing that, it opens up a whole new world of potential for healing, because self-condemnation is one of the most common components that we see that perpetuates post-traumatic stress disorder.
Say that again. No, say that again. So self-condemnation is something that perpetuates most commonly this post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes. Yeah, it's one of the most common ones. And
wow.
Living in fear.
Yeah, living in fear and self-condemnation. And this is something I've learned, Dr. Troy, in this last year of being out on the road more than any other time. And maybe it's just because it's on the forefront of my mind. But how many people are unkind to their soul, are their own worst critic. And maybe the gift you need to give yourself this holiday season is, you know, be kind to your soul, because Jesus is, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when we berate ourselves, you know, somebody once said, you know, the devil has a plan for your life and the Lord has a plan for your life and you're the one who casts the deciding vote. I wonder how often we vote against ourselves because we're in agreement with the very thing the enemy's saying about us anyway, you know?
Yeah, it happens, I think, more than we like to admit.
Wouldn't that be something if you gave yourself a gift this holiday season? Well, I'm going to wrap up and pray. And I just wonder if you would join me, listener friend, as I pray for Dr. Troy and his family. I just feel like I pray for you and Christine all the time, just because I feel like you're on the front lines on so many levels. People probably don't have any idea how front line you are on so many levels, advocating for the health of many. And I'm sure the enemy hates that, you know? So let me pray. But Father, I thank you for Dr. Troy and for Christine, for their family, for the practice that they're building, for their hearts, for your kingdom. And I just pray special blessing on them and their children, Father, and for Synapse. I pray protection all around, that you put angels by that place. Bless the whole staff. Help them all to take their rightful place in you. And I pray, God, for every right person who needs to be there would find their place there, Lord. And for all of us, God, help us to know the next steps to live healthy for you, Lord. Help us to be kind to our soul, to forgive ourselves and forgive others, and to make some healthy choices that just creates space for healing and for health. I know that you want that for us. Lord, we love you. We thank you that it's for freedom that you came to set us free. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Always an honor to have you, Dr. Troy. Thank you.
Privilege.
You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of our program up on the website at myfaithradio.com. This is one I think you're going to want to share with a friend. So when you get to the Live the Promise show page, at the top of the page, you'll see The Great Giveaway. I hope you'll join us and engage in a random act of kindness. Tell us about it. Remember, the first 100 of you will get a free copy of my book, Your Powerful Prayers, and a fun, sweet treat. And the two most inspiring stories will get a great giveaway basket full of movies, books, and all kinds of fun goodies. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.